A prominent California doctor knew she was in danger. She tried to warn her loved ones to take preventatives, but still, her life was taken in a calculated, disturbing act of rage with an attempted cover-up. But like the fire set, the truth is rising from the smoke and ashes of betrayal. Before getting into the details of this case, I just want to give a trigger warning for domestic abuse survivors.
They want justice. They want answers.
What stands out to you about his personality?
What's the family want most of all?
But you were just the last person to see her.
There's an arrest warrant.
In Lee.
You have a lot of weighty accusations.
Dr. Irene Galai was a mother of twin boys. They were teenagers. A physician who dedicated her career to healing others. And a woman who knew that her marriage was over, but may have underestimated just how far her deranged husband would go to ensure she never walked away. Let's go back in time just a few months, January 6th of this year. The setting is San Marino, California. It's an affluent, quiet neighborhood nestled northeast of Los Angeles. It is the kind of place where you would expect to see those manicured lawns, kids playing everywhere, certainly not a murder scene. At around 9:46 in the morning, a neighbor, she sees smoke billowing from a $2.6 million home. She calls the fire department, and according to reports, she sees something very odd. It's the husband who lives there, Yun Lai. He was standing outside, appearing confused. When she mentions the smoke, he seems bewildered. He says, well, his wife Irene was picking up their sons from baseball practice. But there's a problem with that statement. Irene's car is still parked out front in the driveway. And what's worse, when firefighters get inside, they reportedly find her body in the den. She was burned, battered, and positioned near not one but two separate ignition points. She had burns on 60% of her body, according to the LA Times. But those burns, as horrifying as they are, they came after something else, something more brutal. She had suffered blunt force trauma to the head. Her nose was broken, her eye sockets fractured, and one tooth was even missing. The death investigation summary later confirms what detectives always suspected early on. This was no accident and definitely not a tragic fire. This was a violent killing. Next, to her scorched remains, two potential weapons, a metal baseball bat and a frying pan, both reportedly stained with blood. Now, I wonder why those two were even left behind. If the thought was that an intense fire would destroy metal, not true. A fire can damage metal, but it doesn't completely destroy it. But that's good for the detectives in this case. They now have their weapon. Dr. Irene Galai was a board-certified endocrinologist. She was the founder and CEO of California Diabetes and Hormone Specialists in Arcadia. Many left glowing online reviews, described her as life-saving, compassionate, and brilliant. Now that kind of specialist helps regulate hormones for various diseases and reproduction and ailments. So she was basically, she was a healer. And she wasn't just a beloved doctor. She was a mother, a business owner, a daughter, a sister, and she was trying to leave a marriage that reportedly was troubled for decades. Irene had first tried to file for divorce more than 20 years ago. She let that go and carried on raising her boys with her husband. But in August of 2024, she made the decision to file again, and this time she went even further. She had demands. She asked the court to void their premarital agreement. Why? Because she discovered something sinister. Several properties the couple owned were under only her husband's name, not hers. It's been reported that text messages from her to her brother, describing her husband as Kevin, which is his American name, as begging her to come back. But she didn't give in so easily. She had a bunch of boundaries and demands. Her conditions were therapy, transparency, her name added to the properties. Her brother asked, quote, "That seems like a lot. Do you think he'll agree?" And she answered in a text message exchange, "It depends on what's more important to him." Now, it's really hard to hear that text exchange because it's haunting foreshadowing. It seems some family members, they definitely were aware of her concerns and her fears and the struggles ongoing with her husband. Court documents show the prenup was officially voided in September of last year, and Irene's name was added to the real estate empire, but family say she still intended to go through with the divorce, and she was afraid. Apparently, she felt it. She warned her family that if she ever was alone with Kevin, she feared for her safety. She made sure her 16-year-old twin boys were always around when he came by. Usually the routine was he'd come and pick them up and drop them off for practice. That was an everyday occurrence, and she wanted her boys to always be witnessed. To me, that indicates her boys must have known something, gotten some kind of sense or inkling or hints that she was afraid of him, and she didn't want to be alone with them, and that she was just simply taking the best precautions that she could. But what she didn't know, or maybe she could have never known, was that on the morning of January 6th, her husband, he had a plan. According to the investigation, he arrived around 7 a.m. to pick up the twins and take them to practice. By 7:06, Ring doorbell camera data shows the sensors in the dining room in the garden where Irene's body was later found were manually disabled. Lai then tells the boys that he's going to work, but he didn't. Camera footage shows a vehicle matching his returning to the area at 8:19 in the morning. That's just over an hour before the fire is reported. Firefighters are called at 9:46. And the story that Lai tells about being at baseball practice, about returning to find the house burning engulfed in flames, it quickly begins to fall apart. But it ends up taking 6 months for investigators to gather enough evidence to make an arrest. So in July of this year, the Los Angeles District Attorney announces charges. It is one count of murder and one count of arson of an inhabited structure. Yun Lai, now 62, he's arrested and he pleads not guilty. His bail is set at over $2 million. If convicted, he does face life in prison. Now, his attorney has stated that the fire was not caused by his client, but perhaps faulty wiring, so we can get an idea of where his defense is headed, the angle that he's going for the defense. The DA, he didn't mince any words when making this public statement. He said the violent death of Dr. Irene Galai is heartbreaking and deeply disturbing, that she was not only a respected physician and business leader, but a mother who deserved safety and dignity in her own home. Well, let's be honest. How many women are denied that basic dignity? How many warning signs have gone unheeded, minimized, or pushed aside? Irene's case is not just tragic, but it's also very familiar for so many women. She did everything she could. She got legal counsel. She made demands of him. She informed her family. She protected her children, and yet she was still killed in her home in a brutal, intimate, rage-filled act. And after her death, Irene's teenage sons reportedly refused to stay with their father, choosing instead to be with their aunt. Their fear, like their loss, it's just immense. Irene's patients, they left so many tributes on her Yelp page. One person called her a guardian angel. Another said she saved their life, but even as a healer, she couldn't save herself. Oh, that's heartbreaking. There are so many layers here: domestic violence, financial control, the use of fire as a cover-up. Surveillance cameras end up being silent witnesses, and the children. It always comes down to the children being caught in the middle. It's a case that reminds us just how much control, rage, and manipulation can hide behind the doors of anybody's home, really, even when you think you're in safe neighborhoods. But the truth has a way of breaking through the smoke. Now, this story, it's still unfolding. In fact, his preliminary hearing is set just a few days, August 12th, and he continues to deny any involvement. And now his teen boys will have to live through a trial unless her husband confesses or if he takes a plea deal, if it's even offered to him. Now, it's a part of a devastating pattern we are actually seeing more of. And as we turn to the next case, we see yet again how unchecked domestic abuse can escalate into unthinkable violence. When I first saw this headline, I thought it had to be fake. I double-checked the source, and then I checked it again. This headline read, "Man felt bad for murdering his current wife, so he killed his ex-wife because she deserved it." It was so brazen and so absurdly chilling, but it's real. This is a real case, and it's actually unfolding right now. It's this deranged double murderer. The story takes us from Brooklyn to North Carolina, to a city you may have heard of, even if you don't know much about it. It's called Schenectady, New York. And before I get into this crime, let's talk about the place Schenectady. It isn't just a tongue twister. It's actually got a lot of history. It's known as the city that lights and hauls the world. Schenectady was once a major manufacturing hub for General Electric and the American Locomotive Company. And it's also the backdrop of many novels, films, and folk songs, and that's why I've heard of it. But on May 28th of 2023, its name became synonymous with something even darker, a premeditated, cold-blooded murder committed by a man on the run for another murder. The man at the center of all of this horror, it's 38-year-old Timothy Taylor, originally from Brooklyn, New York. He was once married to a woman named Tashawn Folks Taylor. They shared more than a decade of history together, including two of her three children, they're his, and now they're teenagers. But that history was marred by domestic violence, incident after incident, documented and charged. At the time of her death, Timothy Taylor had three outstanding charges in Schenectady City Court. Listen to this. Criminal obstruction of breathing, criminal contempt, and harassment, all involving Tashawn, and all charges he fled from, relocating to North Carolina. So let's pause here. You've got a man with a documented history of abuse. He's facing charges for it. He skips town, leaves the state, and starts a new life with a new woman, and then he kills that woman? Let's start with murder number one. It happened on May of 2023. Timothy Taylor's current wife is stabbed to death in Brooklyn. Now, her name, it hasn't been publicly released yet, but we know this. After the killing, Taylor fled to New York. He was just gone, on the run. This manhunt begins, and the NYPD, they're after him. They're looking for him. So where does he go? North Carolina. It was a place to hide, lay low, figure out what's next. What he told detectives later on when he was caught, it's just chilling. In his own words, he said he felt bad about killing his current wife. He said she didn't deserve it. But he said his ex-wife, Tashawn, she did. She deserved it. She deserved to be killed. That is what he said. Imagine that level of hatred, the twisted logic, that the mother of your children. So then after killing his current wife for unknown reasons at this point, he then traveled across state lines to track down his ex-wife and finish what he believed was, quote, unfinished business. Just weeks later, still May of 2023, Taylor takes a bus, arrives in Schenectady late at night, and just after 11 p.m., he checks into a hotel. He then walks through the streets late at night, passing homes, dark, quiet, sleeping, past people who had no idea what he was planning. He walks straight to 1030 Pleasant Street, which is his ex-wife's home. And early the next morning, he breaks into the house. Inside are Tashawn and her three children, two of which are his. And what happens next is just heart-wrenching. Tashawn is stabbed more than 22 times. But here's what the district attorney said that really stuck with me. He said, quote, people should know that Tashawn, while facing down her killer and knowing his intent, made sure to protect her children. She knew what he was there to do. And even in those final moments, she fought, not just for her own life, but to shield her children from harm from him. After the murder, Taylor climbed out of a bedroom window and he just started walking the neighborhood leisurely. He began discarding his bloody clothes, leaving breadcrumbs of evidence along the way. He took a taxi back to his hotel, grabbed a few things, and then headed to the Albany bus station, and he just vanished. But he didn't get far. On June 2nd, just a few days later, authorities found him in Philadelphia, sitting at a bar, just having some drinks, enjoying himself as he didn't just destroy two families and murder two women. U.S. Marshals took him into custody and he was extradited back to New York. It was during questioning with detectives from both jurisdictions that he confessed and he revealed everything. He admitted to both murders, and he specifically said he sought out Tashawn because he harbored deep animosity, that she, quote, deserved it. And this next part, it's tough. Tashawn's three teenage children, they were inside the home when their mother was murdered. The oldest, a high school kid, he stepped up in a way no child should ever have to. The family and these brave kids, they were just instrumental in helping the district attorney piece everything together, along with witnesses and security camera. And the DA's office really credited the family and everyone that came forward to help. When you think about it now, what those kids had to live through, what they witnesses, the images in their minds that will never leave, the violence, the screaming, probably questioning every move, no child could have stopped a rage-filled madman, murderer, who broke in one goal in mind, to kill. And no child should ever see that kind of deranged behavior from another human being, let alone their own father. On July 1st of this year, just over 2 years after Tashawn's murder, Timothy Taylor pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. It was part of a deal. He will serve 22 years in prison for her murder. But his story certainly doesn't end there. He still faces a pending indictment in Brooklyn for the murder of his current wife. Prosecutors are pushing hard for more time, obviously, life without the possibility of parole. The district attorney said it best. He said, "It is my hope that Mr. Taylor, after also facing the charges brought by our colleagues in Kings County, never lives in the world again as a free man." There's a lot to unpack here, and it's not just about one man's deadly rage. It's about what happens when patterns of abuse go unchecked, when systems are slow to act, when victims are forced to live in fear until it's too late. He had to break in because she knew. She probably deep down knew the moment was coming, that he could kill her. He wanted to. He was capable of it. So how do you prepare for that moment when you already live states away? Officials said Tashawn tried to survive. She tried to shield her kids. And in her final act, she showed incredible courage. And to the children who lived through this, your strength is unimaginable. To the law enforcement who helped bring this man in, thank you. And to anyone listening, if you are somebody you know, someone you love, if they're in a dangerous situation, please don't wait. Reach out, because there is help. And on that note, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Killer Jeans.